You're with Sounds Good on WKMS. I am Tracy Ross. Kate Lochte's in the studio, along with Dr. Steve White, an associate professor of biology at Murray State University. Good morning, and thank you for being on the program.
Indeed, and I'm not sure that I can hear myself. Sorry about that. Can you hear? All right. Dr. White, we are talking about eagles because all around us there are eagle tours, and it may not be obvious to everyone, it's certainly not to me, how significant it is that we have this population of eagles in our midst. Tell me the history of how come Western Kentucky is in an eagle habitat to this degree at this time.
Well, that's a relatively complex answer. But and it has changed with time through history. Probably the most significant place we need to stop first is the occurrence and the use of DDT as an insecticide in the United States and around the world. That resulted in eggshell thinning. It took a long time to prove that and really come to the understanding that the resulting population declines that we saw in bald eagles from historical times was a result of the use of DDT, but that was banned then, I think, about 1972. And almost instantly following that ban, bald eagle populations and other water birds, brown pelicans, peregrine falcons, not necessarily a water bird in that case, but many other populations began to show some indications that indeed the problem really had been DDT and the metabolites of DDT from that standpoint in causing thin eggshells to be laid and then reproductive failures of those populations. But by the time that occurred in 72, nesting populations of bald eagles had disappeared from Tennessee, had disappeared from Kentucky, had disappeared from our surrounding states, at least the southern end of Indiana, the southern end of Illinois, from the central portion of the United States. Variously dated from the 1950s, 1960s, those populations had extinguished. Bald eagles continued to do well in Alaska and more remote areas of the country and continent. But within the middle latitudes in the middle of the United States, those populations had disappeared variously across the 1960s, certainly. They were gone. Then with 72, the ban of DDT, there were efforts around the nation to begin to do what we could professionally to reestablish those populations of bald eagles. And that reestablishment was largely done, in this case with bald eagles, by a process known as hacking bald eagles. And that is a process that doesn't have to be just with eagles, but is the release of captive-reared zoo-type offspring back into the wild. And the major theory behind that is you obviously want very little exposure to humans, and so it's done in a way that reduces any habituation to human activity or imprinting that might occur. And the understanding that these birds, and bald eagle in particular, will return to nest and breed in the area where they learn to fly. And so you take young chicks with minimum exposure to people, feed them with no exposure to people through remote systems. You allow that to occur on a tower, on a platform in the wild. And then as that bird learns to fly from that location, the theory is that most of those will return to that region as it seeks to breed. And that, in this case, was done locally, at least within Western Kentucky, was entirely done by the TVA, Land Between the Lakes, got involved very early in saying we'd like those kind of projects here. Land Between the Lakes was a particularly appropriate place to do that because with the construction of Lake Barkley and the earlier construction of Kentucky Lake on the Tennessee River system, eagle habitat here really improved, and it's far better today because of those large reservoirs than it was when the boat people arrived on the continent from that standpoint. And so part of your question really relates to, we've got way better eagle habitat today than we historically had because of the construction of those reservoirs, lots of shoreline, that sort of stuff. That's a great place for bald eagles. But we still had bald eagles in this region. They had nested in Kentucky and Tennessee prior to the use of DDT, and so we were looking to restore that. And we had a fairly significant wintering population of bald eagles that had continued to use the Reelfoot Lake area because of commercial fishing there and some just really unique places. Many of the migratory eagles continued even through the 60s, 70s, and the worst of the DDT low population days. Reelfoot Lake was a spectacular eagle resource. And so we just had a lot of eagle tradition within the region. So TVA became involved in hacking projects. And in the late 1970s, I would have to go back and look, 78, 79, I think, were their first eagle releases. Started out quite small, but then expanded with initial success of the young off the platforms in the early years of the 1980s till they were releasing numerous dozen type numbers of eagles each year in the hacking projects. The first nests then that reoccurred post the DDT era occurred in the south end of LBL and at the Cross Creeks National Wildlife Refuge just a few miles south of LBL. And those nests, when we were able to check the adults that were making those first wild nesting, natural nesting attempts, if you will, were wearing bands that had been placed on those birds when they were hacked young, coming out of the platform, and worked actually a year ahead of what we thought at the time were the as fast as it could occur, in that eagles don't mature until 4 or 5 years of age. The very first nest actually had an adult that did not have the full white head and white tail that marks the adult plumage, but was sexually mature enough to pull off, and the conditions were good enough here that they successfully raised young. And that's sort of the completion of the concept of hacking, is those adults go out, naturally form their own pairs then, and come back and produce. And so it happened actually faster than we would have predicted under the best conditions. And so it was really a spectacular wildlife success. LBL then in total went on to become at least the second most important hacking project in the nation. Pete Nye out of New York, I think in total hacked more birds, but his project went further and later than the LBL. LBL was frankly so successful that we were able to shut down those efforts in needing to release captive reared birds into the wild. And some of those birds were not just captively reared. They were actually birds that were transported from Alaska from wild nests, captured early, taken from wild nests. They would take one young, leave another there, and that's it, and that was used to supplement the captive reared birds that were available at the time. And there was a lot of competition for those captive reared birds, sure, because there were projects started all over the nation because it looked like it was going to work so well. But that's really probably the key wildlife management tool and technique that was used to help reestablish so that folks can go out now and go, oh, it's just another eagle.
It's a pretty amazing story, isn't it?
Pretty good story.
Now, you mentioned to me earlier that your personal research in eagles has slowed down over the last 7 or so years, but give me your best guess as to our population of eagles who live here and eagles who come through in the winter.
Well, I've
ballpark.
I've used this
number. Hate to ask a scientist that.
Within a 60 to 70 mile radius of Murray, that would include Reelfoot Lake and the lower portions of the Ohio River and around the confluence of the Mississippi, Ohio, up to Paducah and the land between the lakes area and a little bit of West Tennessee and some other places besides just Reelfoot. There's probably 500 wintering bald eagles. Now, they move around and they shift from one place to another, and it's highly dependent upon the weather. The colder it is, the more eagles we'll have, the harsher the winter. And as the winters are milder, eagles follow the waterfowl. They'd rather eat a duck than a fish, frankly. And they stay where the waterfowl concentrations are. And as we get the milder winters, many of the geese that used to be here are now probably up in Illinois somewhere around a cornfield in an unfrozen reservoir there, and they love to eat geese. And so they stay close to those waterfowl concentrations, move around a good little bit. But I've used the figure of within a 50, 60-mile radius of Murray, you can probably find 500 wintering bald eagles in the average year. And those numbers are good and solid. But then you really have to answer that question back to the summertime. And I think the last I looked, there are something on the order in West Tennessee, West Kentucky, 50 active bald eagle nests in any given summer year at this point in time. And that's up from basically zero in the late 1970s and started with. And that's really when I was most involved with that work, was tracking those very early nests and their nesting success and watching that build. And one of my graduate students finished with a study that looked at 50 active bald eagle nests about 1985, 86, somewhere in there, that were in, and the characteristics of those nesting pairs that were going on in the mid, late 1980s.
With that small a number, even though it is a big number, I'm wondering if you scientists became acquainted with any particular eagles which were remarkable for some reason. If they're all banded, you must have gotten to know them.
That has happened, not by me. Some, as there are artists in this world and others, there are some individuals that are much better at being able to recognize individual birds than I. And so I haven't worked that work a lot, but certainly in places, there are individuals who have followed. And most everybody knows that eagles tend to breed for life or until they lose a partner, and then they reform a new pair bond at that point. But they are very traditional. Once a nest is established, now a nest is actually probably better thought of as a nesting territory. It typically may have two or three nest sites within that nesting territory, and they may move for two or three years in one nest and two or three years in another nest, and then come back to one that was previously occupied over a series of years from that standpoint. But they're clearly recognized as, and we actually refer to them as, this might be the Wind Point nesting pair, and over here is the Duncan Bay pair or something of that nature.
Have you experienced over the years having to help an eagle that's been injured?
For a number of years, Murray State ran a raptor rehabilitation center, and that was in those very early years, and we had a number of bald eagles that came in with various states of disrepair and injuries. But that program has been closed for a long number of years now, partially because eagles are doing so well. Much of the value of doing raptor rehabilitation was to be ready for those endangered species that were in our area, which would have included, at the time, bald eagles, osprey, and peregrine falcons. All of those populations are off the endangered species list because, again, post-DDT, things have improved. Bald eagles have probably done the best out of that group. Arguably, osprey would be right in there with them. But peregrine falcons have continued to be a little bit rarer, and they're a little more difficult to. Hacking has worked, but has not maybe been as successful as it's been with those other species. And now those are common. And so we've closed that facility, and there are still facilities that do that, and they're important. But it's a personal understanding that mortality is a normal and natural thing out there in the wild. And once we've recognized the problems that were associated with DDT and that mortality, taking care of those, eagles are doing well. And if one flies into something and a power line, that's sad to that individual animal. But the population is, in a sense, is going to replace that bird, and they're doing fine. And if we look at the long-term trends, if you go to the breeding bird surveys and look at the results for almost any of the raptors, whether they be bald eagles, osprey, in particular here, they're just doing great. Red-tailed hawks, great horned owls, barred owls, they're all doing well. And so we shut down that effort and redirected those energies and efforts in other ways that we think are more important to the conservation status of the mid-continent area of the U.S.
Dr. White, fascinating story, great perspective. We should note that you came to Murray State University about the time that the Eagles started coming back to LBL.
Well, it had nothing to do with me. I think you can go back to those folks, that, the TVA biologists that sought and looked ahead and were groundbreakers in getting involved in hacking, and that and they clearly, I think, deserve the most of the credit here for reestablishing bald eagles and establishing bald eagles in osprey as well in western Kentucky, West Tennessee.
Thank you for telling the story.